I lived in a house that was less than 1,000 square feet during this period. You know, I went through a lot. I sold things, sold everything, you know, all that stuff. And as long as you believe, you're going to get there somehow. It may not take the form that you want, but be surprised. And so for me, that advice about, hey, it's a crazy piece of advice, but it worked for me. Get rid of all the safety nets. Because you have them, it's so hard, you're going to take them.
Yeah.
Get rid of them, and then you'll see what's in you.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed.
When Ethan Brown started Beyond Meat in 2009, he did it with a simple question, and he made it his mission. The question, why do you need an animal to create meat? Why can't you build meat directly from plants? Well, it turns out you can. And Ethan Brown and his company Beyond Meat figured out a way to do it. Today, his company is valued at over $11 billion. But more importantly to Ethan, is that he is on his way to achieving his mission, where Beyond Meat products are completely indistinguishable from animal protein. And eventually, he knows he can even make those products better for you to eat than meat. He is a purpose-driven entrepreneur and one who has achieved enormous success. I knew Ethan as an entrepreneur who was on this mission to change the world in a positive way. I wanted to know when that started and if his original premise when he started Beyond Meat was to answer the question, why can't you build meat directly from plants?
That's a great question about sort of when that came to mind. And it reminds me of the work of a guy named Stephen Johnson, who does a lot on innovation. And he says, as much as we want to have a moment of kind of spectacular insight in these stories, often that's not the case. And so for me, you know, I think he calls it a slow hunch. And I think that one of the reasons that I've been fortunate enough to be able to participate in this in the way that I have is that I'm someone who did have a slow hunch, but was persistent enough to try to figure out what that meant and sort of what the implications of my desire to do this were. And so it began first with the problem, not necessarily the solution. So for me, the problem was, how do you take a culture and a species, the human race, folks that are so interested in, and have been so reliant on animal protein and such an important part of our culture, and continue to provide the sensory experience and the nutritional experience of consuming animal protein, but do so without the animal? I mean, that was really my first question. And the reason for doing that was the ones we were just talking about around, you know, whether it's human health or climate or natural resources, such as land, energy, and water, and then ultimately animal welfare. And so it began with framing the problem, and then that process which I've spoken about in the past of kind of marinating in that and thinking enough about it over time to come up with something that was interesting. And so it wasn't until I got very clear on the need to do this, and a really significant need, that then your brain starts to work. Okay, well, how do you think about it in a way that's clear? And for me, it was that question of origin or composition. And so the origin of animal meat has been how it's been defined for most of our existence. And so, you know, about 12,000 years ago, we began with the chicken, cow, and pig. But before that, it was, you know, game. And I said, well, what could you get if you moved away from the origin definition and moved toward the composition definition? And so for me, thinking about it in terms of the composition of meat and identifying what those core parts of meat was part of the breakthrough. And so that was really, if there was a moment, it was, okay, understanding that meat is really an assembly of five things. It's amino acids, lipids, trace minerals, vitamins, and water. Those don't necessarily need to come from an animal. And in fact, they're in no way exclusive in the animal. And this is where I think science plays such an important role in what we're doing, not necessarily even from a solution perspective, but from an understanding perspective. All of these things that we're talking about, amino acids, lipids, minerals, vitamins, water, they're abundant in the universe, in the earth rather. They permeate the earth. And you know, in fact, we're all made from a very similar set of materials, right? You can look at the primordial soup, for example. And that is, if you look at the primordial soup, all of these things that we're talking about today really have their origin in that beginning of life. And so whether that life form took an animal, took a plant, or took a, you know, now a human animal, they're made from the same things. And so we can go and do the work to find in plants the materials that we need to make meat. And so skipping the animal seemed intuitive.
Yeah. I mean, that's super interesting. And would you say, let's say we were in a different time 50 years ago, would it be possible to create a company like Beyond Meat?
That's a great question. So companies did try this at least 40 years ago. ADM, for example, and others, more so in the 80s actually, tried this. And of course, there were companies like Worthington Foods and then later Morningstar and companies like that. But I think what they were after was to provide that finicky eater, someone who didn't want to have animal protein for some reason, an alternative. And we never took that perspective. We always said, we want to build meat directly from plants. So we want to create the same thing, not just an alternative. And so it would have been harder 50 years ago, but some of the equipment we use, so much of the equipment we use is from the medical community. So like if you go in and had an MRI, for example, in your knee or some part of your body, you're seeing the type of equipment we use in our labs. So it's easier today because of the technology, but also what makes it easier today is the recognition that this is a global problem and the need of a massive solution. And so much of what we've done at Beyond Meat is to borrow from the energy sector, which is where I came from. And so I worked for a company that made proton exchange membrane fuel cells for a long time. A great company. They lead the sector in that area. And the idea there was, okay, climate's a real problem. It's a global problem. Earth is kind of in the balance. So we're going to put together the best scientists, engineers, and managers, and we're going to fund them properly, give them a goal. In this case, it was to beat the internal combustion engine and to replace industrial power. And we're going to get out of their way. And for me, it was taking that model. Let's get the best scientists, best engineers, best managers, put them all together, give them the right amount of resources, and then get out of their way. And Kellogg and Kraft, they wouldn't have thought like that 50 years ago. They would have said, let's get a couple chefs together and see what we can come up with. So it's a totally different mindset.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And it's funny when you think about it, you guys have been around 2009, I think, is when you launch and just have exploded. It also seems to me that you caught this just time within our history where people were really trying. It's more about sustainability. There's been more effort and mention on sustainability. How much of a factor was the timing of Beyond Meat into your success?
If we're honest, it's incredibly important. You know, I mean, and I've said this before, the Victor Hugo quote, you know, nothing is more powerful than ideas, time has come. I mean, I look at the guys that at least had this notion, you know, you're talking about 50 years ago, I look at a guy like Bob at Follow Your Heart or Seth Tibbett and folks like that. I don't know if they would approach it scientifically in the way we are. They certainly had the same concept, right, that we needed a solution here. And then you look at books that were written. So 50 years ago, next year will be the 50-year anniversary of Diet for a Small Planet, you know, Francis LaPay. And so these books have been around, Silent Spring, all of these things that we read about today and think they're new or not. So it takes so long for an idea to percolate through the cultural consciousness and get to the point where it creates a tipping point. And we're at that tipping point now. And so timing is everything, and we're very lucky.
Yeah. Let me ask you, I mean, just in terms of the idea, you said you had it for a while. How long were you thinking about launching this company? And then how long did it actually take to go for it?
Yeah. I mean, I wish that I was, you know, had more of a quick pass to this because I didn't, but maybe timing again is important. And so it was a good thing that I didn't. You know, when I was in my early 20s, the first investment that I ever made was in Worthington Foods. At the time, it was traded publicly and then Kellogg bought it. So I was always interested in this idea, but I was in the energy sector and I think I needed to go through that journey because it exposed me to this way of thinking about solving big problems. Mm. And I actually studied for a long time the Manhattan Project of the Second World War because my first area of interest in energy was in nuclear energy and particularly how to clean it up. And so I spent almost a year with the Department of Energy's throughout their weapons complex thinking about how to clean that up. And I wasn't working for them. I was working for a nonprofit and wrote a paper on it. But part of that was the analysis of these big projects to solve big global problems. And so even though my professional energy was focused on energy and climate, personally, I was very passionate about this. And I think you mentioned before, you know, I have an interest in animals. And it's a compassionate interest, but two, it's a scientific interest in that I think that up until Darwin, it was understandable that people could think that animals were distinct and different from us and maybe not, you know, worthy of the same consideration. But Darwin changed everything. And again, talk about the slow hunch. I mean, it took him a long time to put together The Origin of Species and even longer to publish it. He was very anxious about the reaction from the Church of England. Yeah. But once you think about the universe and life in it from Darwin's perspective, then you understand that the animals that surround us are really our ancestors and that they share our central nervous system. And by virtue of that, they also share our ability to experience pain and pleasure. So once you understand that, it's very hard to walk away from that. And I understood that because I was exposed to a number of different contexts with animals growing up. I grew up in the city, but we had a farm that we spent a ton of time on, dairy cattle there, and our neighbors, some beef cattle and things of that nature. And so I was always struggling in my mind about the difference between the animals we kept in the house and those which were in the barn and why they were different. And, you know, I was also growing up at a time of when, you know, in school you were being taught not to discriminate based on color, not discriminate based on superficial differences. And so I was struggling with a paw versus a hoof, you know, things like that, and what really makes the difference. And so that stuck with me as a social justice issue. And so as I got older, it kind of continued to surface. And then I began to think about, in the climate perspective, the fact that livestock was contributing so much on the climate side, and on the human health perspective, that people were prematurely shortening their lives due to what they were eating. So I got to go do something about this. And that was really what pushed me into it. But it took me many years to get comfortable and many years to make the change.
Yeah, it's amazing to think, because you were thinking about this like you're talking about. I love it, like when you were a kid, and like how that just carried with you. And it seems like even prior to Beyond Meat and becoming this entrepreneur, you've always had a focus or have wanted to have some type of impact socially. Has that always been your route?
Yeah, it has been. And I didn't know that business would be the form that it took. But very fortunate, I was surrounded by, you know, I grew up going to Quaker schools. In that tradition, you sort of let your life speak is this thing that they say. And so doesn't necessarily mean you need to go do something socially oriented, but there's a strong sense of that in that community. And then my parents are still pretty active socially. And so I grew up in that environment. And it wasn't a question of whether I was going to do something in that regard, is kind of what. I feel good about that.
Was Beyond the first company you ever started?
It was the second organization. I had started a nonprofit in my 20s. That was focused on energy and the environment, but that didn't end well for me. Actually, I've told the story before. I was fired.
Yeah, what happened?
I was fired by my own board, and that's pretty hard to do at that level. But it was a learning experience for me. I think failure is really important. I think it's extremely important because you don't fear it anymore after it happens. And with Beyond, I never actually thought Beyond was going to fail. I didn't know the form success was going to take. But even if it did, I knew I was going to be okay. And I remember thinking I would walk by this very small, this apartment complex. All the apartments were very small, and it was not a nice part of town. And it was on my way to the office. And I used to walk to the office, and I said, you know, I could end up in one of those apartments. This doesn't work. But it didn't scare me. I just knew I'd have to start again. But so being fired early and having kind of that type of thing happen, you realize it's not the end of the world. You get up the next day and you're fine.
Yeah. And did that, when you say, hey, when you went out and said, I'm going to start Beyond, it sounds like that was in the back of your mind. And it's so important because we have so many listeners who are wannabe or potential entrepreneurs who their biggest fear is failure and getting out there and what that means. And it sounds like to me, you overcame that telling yourself, hey, it'll be okay. Even if I fail, I might end up in that building, but I'm going to be okay. And was that something that put you at ease and allowed you to be successful?
Yeah, I think it did. But the other piece is that I'm very comfortable with my back against the wall. Like, and in fact, I think that I do better under pressure than not. You know, I think it sharpens the focus. But that resiliency, I think, is really important. You know, I'm in a part of our house now. I'm looking out at our basketball hoop, and I was just out there yesterday with my son, who's a very avid basketball player and shooter, and he's a shooting guard. And we were talking about this, that for me, the mark of a great shooter is how they recover from their first miss in a game. It's not how many they make. Any guy can get on a streak. Like, you know, that can happen, right? But the shooter that can respond very quickly to adversity and get their shot back on track is going to be the better shooter. And as I was saying, when you're out here practicing, practice the reaction to your misses more than anything else. And for me, that's really important. Because you're going to fail, you're going to make mistakes. And particularly at the pace that we move so quickly, we're going to make a lot of mistakes. But how you react to those is, to me, the difference.
Yeah, I love that. I love that analogy, what you just told your son. And it really is so true. And I've always been amazed at mindset. And we had Tim Brown, the founder of Allbirds, on the podcast. Yeah, and we were talking about Last Dance had just come out with Jordan. And and we were just talking about that mentality of, like you said, your son, it's those people who can, for me, I miss two shots, I'm out. I'm done, you know, like I'm going to miss every other shot.
Yeah.
The same thing. And you say cornerbacks in football, that same mentality, which, congrats, DeAndre Hopkins.
Oh, that's terrific. Thank you for saying that. I love DeAndre. Look, did you see that? What a ridiculous thing.
Oh, he made a ridiculous catch last night we're talking about. And DeAndre is an ambassador, or he's a big fan of Beyond. Yeah.
He's a shareholder and everything else. He's a great guy.
And I'm thinking about the cornerback that messed up, you know, that DeAndre caught that ball over. But what you're talking about is, right, it's about getting back out there. And it sounds like you've been able to either teach yourself that, or you learn that from your first initial failure when you got fired by your own board. Is that ingrained? Did you learn it? Is that, have you been like that since you were a kid?
That's a terrific, and it's absolutely the right question to ask. And one of the things that's on The Last Dance, which I could watch 1,000 times.
Oh, it's so good.
One of the greatest moments in that is when, and it's just a small piece, but they bring up Gary Payton, and Mike Jordan can't stop himself from saying that I had no problem with the glove. The guy's like, you know, Michael's probably like close to 60. He doesn't need to say that, but it's like, that's what's in him. So part of it is, people always talk about leadership and learning to be a great leader. And absolutely, you can learn to be a better leader. But there's also a feeling of, like, if you care about people and you're obsessed about your outcome and you have good character, you're probably going to be a good leader. So there's things that are in us from the very beginning that can help us be a great leader. And so you don't need to go out and try to emulate DeBama or whatever. You just find that within yourself, the character that you have, align it with good values, and you can be a good leader. And so that moment with Jordan is like, God, you know, his stripes are not going to change.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, like, it's crazy.
Yeah, but so sorry, what was your question?
I forgot, but I will say, I did remember one about The Last Dance, which I thought was nuts with Jordan, where which I thought was, like, I've always wanted to know his mentality, because I always thought his mentality, that's what separated him from everyone, right? Yeah. I thought Kobe had it very similar, but Jordan, with that mentality, like, I think there was a part he said he made up a story, like George Karl, like, said something. Yeah. Like, I
put
was
his,
like,
arm around him on the way off the court.
And, right. Yeah. But do you think that, as a leader now and someone who's leading a major multi-billion dollar business, can you really, does that turn into an effective leader? I thought some of the traits, I wasn't so sure maybe that it would work so much in the boardroom, on the basketball court for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's a great question. I mean, I think they have a special, because they're so much more gifted than everybody else, they may have a special pass on those things. I mean, a guy like Kobe or Jordan. But I don't think, like, I would not encourage young players to behave like that today. You have to be just, I mean, Jordan's famous line that's hilarious, right? Where his rookie year, and he scored some enormous amount of points, and they're walking off the court, and one of the coaches says, you know, Mike, there's no I in team. He says, there isn't a win.
I love that. Like, I love that quote. It's so bad, but it's you know, like,
I can't say that. Like, I need my whole team, and I love my team, and they make me better and everything else. But I do think that learning, the guys that I look to for leadership are guys like Stephen Covey. You know, it's that character-based leadership that will ultimately carry the day, and all the other stuff is kind of background noise. But if you have the right character and you instill that in the people around you, and they know you're going to be there. I mean, this is such an emotional thing. Like, our leadership team is emotional. Like, it's, we don't want to lose. We want to win. We want to deliver this. There's going to be a group of people on this earth in this generation that separates meat from animals. That's going to happen. We want to be that group. We feel that we deserve it. We feel that we're putting in the time and energy. We have the talent. And so it's a very emotional thing. And we lead with emotion at Beyond Meat. So it's not something that's probably very different experience working under General Mills, for example.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you lead and you're running a company that has a mission, which is unusual, and a mission that is extremely, when you think about it, it's a mission that has never been, let's say, achieved in the history of mankind, right?
And
you guys sound like you believe you can be the ones to
do
that.
We want to be. And so it really gets you access as a part of your psyche and your spirit that allows you to do things that maybe you didn't think you could do. terms of just pushing. And when you come to Beyond Meat, we're going to push you. We're going to make you uncomfortable, and you're going to move more quickly than anywhere else you've ever been. And that's all part of the process for us. And I do, the way you said it, it's a very special mission for us. I mean, I think it's interesting that people are trying to reach the moon and colonize all this stuff, but I want to save this place.
Yeah, right.
I want to put my energy into saving it because I love this place. And I think that the diversity of life here, I don't know if you had a chance to see my octopus teacher, but that just blew me away, this documentary. And it just reinforced my sense that, you know, we're all common life. It's just different genetic expression. We all have a will to live. We all want to, you know, we all enjoy the feeling of the sun on our backs, whether you're an animal or a person. Let's make sure that this planet makes it. And that's something that, how can you not be inspired?
I love that. That's right. I've never heard it expressed in that way, which is super interesting. Was there a time when you were first starting out that you thought it, you know, I know you thought it would be successful, but for a lot of the people who listen here have started businesses, you go through so many tough times. Was there ever any real big hurdles that you thought, you know what, I might not be able to get this done?
There were huge hurdles. I mean, there were moments where everything would go wrong. There were moments where I ran out of money. There was a lot of challenges. I mean, one of the things that I remember quite clearly is when I started the company, I started back east and in a small place in the country. And there was our building was a old hospital. And we just were using the kitchen area there. And I can remember leaving my house, going to see from my house and say, either I'm going to live or die based on what happens in that building, you know, literally, but I'm going to succeed or fail based on what's happening in that building. And what's very gratifying to me today is that building's been torn down. And Beyond Meat's really big. And so that makes me happy. But again, I don't know that I thought this was going to fail. I just didn't know whether it was going to be kind of something that allowed me to scratch at this or something that allowed me to really try to solve a global issue. And thank God it's been the latter. And faith has a lot to do with that, just persistence, surrounding yourself with really great people. But where I went to business school, that I took an entrepreneurship class there. And it was a great class. The one thing that I would say is the people that were brought back to speak about their businesses all had successful businesses. I always used
right.
Where's the guy or gal that's living in their parents' basement? Because they tried and they failed. That's the person I want to talk to. You know?
Yeah.
And I want to understand that. And if there are people out there that are listening, I lived in a house that was less than 1,000 square feet during this period. You know, I mean, I went through a lot and I sold things, sold everything, you know, all that stuff. And as long as you believe, you're going to get there somehow. It may not take the form that you want, but you'd be surprised. And so for me, that advice about, hey, it's a crazy piece of advice, but it worked for me. Get rid of all the safety nets. Because if you have them, it's so hard. You're going to take them.
Yeah.
Get rid of them. And then you'll see what's in you. And that's more gratifying than most things, to find out that I have the ability to respond and to move forward and to make something successful.
Was there a key moment where you did say to yourself, I know you said you worked real well with your back against the wall and you had to work so hard to get it off the ground. Has there been, I know it's only been about 10 years, but has there been a moment where you said, wow, look what we've created. I kind of feel comfortable kind of now.
Right. I mean, I always sort of have that fear of me. I don't know. Like, it's sure you have other people that are out there that it could all... You know, I have that fear. I mean, I just do. Like, I've always had that every part of my life. You know, it's like when a date goes great, you know, when you're single, you just want to end it.
Don't mess it up.
It's a second date that's the hardest, you know.
Yeah.
Just like, okay, everything went great. I had my best shirt on, you know.
Yeah. It's only downhill from here.
Exactly. So I have that, I think, that healthy fear. But I mean, the IPO was pretty special. Like, that was a pretty special moment. You know, these customers, whether serving Dunkin' or, you know, the opportunity at McDonald's. I remember being in Canada, it was in the winter, and driving around. I had three different versions of the burger. They were all exactly the same because McDonald's is so good at that. And that really was exciting for me, you know, because I'd always dreamed of that.
Well, isn't, you know, just think of yourself and myself as a kid. Unfortunately, you grow up, well, it's all fast food. You're growing up. And now you guys just also announced, I think recently, one of my favorite places. I mean, I love pizza. Pizza Hut, right? Like,
so good. Yeah.
You're in, right? You're in, isn't that like, just what does that feel like? Just knowing that your product is in all these major fast food chains and it's benefiting consumers to eat healthier and they're enjoying it.
It's amazing. It is a blessing. I mean, and it's very intentional. Like, these are spots that I grew up going to. Dunkin', Pizza Hut, et cetera. Particularly Pizza Hut, I remember telling a story at their convention that this farm that we have, one of the last stops, is about 2.5-3 hour drive from DC, was at a Pizza Hut. My dad would pull over, and I knew that the trip was, we were getting there because one, the time, but two, he would get a nice thing of beer there. Nice, you know how cold that beer is at Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
You know? And I could see him just relax. It was Friday night, his weekend's over, you know. And then I actually used to take my kids back to that Pizza Hut, and they used to play that game, that hook, you know, where you try to get the
grabber that you never win. Like it always falls out.
Yeah. So it's so gratifying to be in there. And I think that's the thing that maybe, you know, separates us a little bit from some of our competition is that I believe in that, that we can make these products healthier and people can have the ability to go to a Pizza Hut, have a great, feel good about what they've done for their body and good about what they've done for the earth. Like, I think that's possible. That's what we're trying to do.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors.
For business owners, saving time is everything because each minute saved can be put back into growing your business. So when you need a business loan, U.S. Bank makes the process quick and convenient. Meet with a banker or apply from anywhere with a simple and secure online application and get a decision in minutes. Save time with U.S. Bank so you can get back to what you do best, running your business. Apply today at usbank.com/fundmybusiness. Credit products offered by U.S. Bank National Association, Equal Housing Lender.
And our next sponsor.
How Success Happens is a podcast that is all about highlighting successful entrepreneurs. And speaking of entrepreneurs, have you checked out The Small Business Revolution? The original series by Deluxe is launching its fifth season. And this year, it's featuring the winning town of Fredonia, New York. I love this series, as the show features inspirational makeovers of select small businesses from the winning town that literally change the lives of these business owners. The makeovers include marketing, like helping these businesses with their brand or attracting more customers. It can include renovations of their physical space, which is super cool because it's led by renovation icon Ty Pennington. And as we all know, now more than ever, we need to reignite America's support of small business. And Small Business Revolution is doing just that. So if you enjoy HSH, definitely you have to watch this show on Hulu Prime Video, or you can check it out at sbr.org/success. That's sbr.org/success.
And we're back.
Where does the mission end? What is the ultimate goal that in your lifetime here with Beyond, I guess, that you ultimately hope to achieve?
Yeah. So I think it's to get to the point where the products are completely indistinguishable from animal protein. That's really important to me, and it's possible scientifically. We know that. And again, it gets back to an assembly of protein, fat, and water, essentially, and flavor molecules and things of that nature. And so it can be done. And to get to the point where they're indistinguishable in beef, pork, and poultry, so that the consumer says, okay, from a sensory experience, I'm having the same experience that I would have if I were having meat that's been pulled from an animal. And then second, get the nutrition to be better than animal protein, right? And so we just released some burgers, media anyway, this week that take us further along that path. So that, you know, less saturated fat, et cetera. And then third is to drop the price below that of animal protein. So get it to the point where the taste is exactly the same, the sensory experience, the nutrition is better than animal protein. And then third, the taste is less than that. The price is less than that of animal protein. You get those three things, it becomes an unusual consumer says, you know, I'm still not going to eat that. That is the holy grail, and that's where we need to go. If we do that, the rest takes care of itself. I use this analogy a lot, which is not, it's imperfect, but people don't lament the landline. You know, they don't defend it. They're not like, you know, my dad used a landline. You know, I'm going to keep using a landline. Dead cold hands. You can take my landline from me. Like, you never hear any of that. And so we just have to make a better product. And that's what we're doing. So if we do our part of the bargain, I think the consumer will come along and say, okay, this is great. It's easier for me to do. I feel good about what I'm putting in my body. And I feel really good about what I'm doing for the earth.
Well, you have certainly done exceptionally well. I like to say as a business, but more importantly for humankind. And we appreciate you coming on the show, sharing your experience.
It's a pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Thank you for the really thoughtful questions and the time and opportunity to tell our story.
Yeah, I need to, you know, it's funny on this show, we always interview all these people who have been super successful, but to your point,
I might want to start interviewing some of my friends and people I know who are living in their parents' basements. Myself, you know, one day might be included if my new business doesn't work out. But
that's healthy fear, right? That's healthy fear. That gets you going.
It does. You know? It does. It does. All right. Well, we appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
Take care. You too. Bye. Thank you, man.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com. or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.